mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, exploring Documenta, the so-called Olympics of the art world, opened to the public earlier this month. So what does this gargantuan exhibit mean to those outside the art world stratosphere? And closer to the ground, we'll look at the fabulous art blog Guarlingo. Also, a chronicle of chronic fatigue. The author of an autobiographical novel talks about traveling across the U.S. as a lone Brit, incapacitated by a disease that does not engender pity. But first, a sad twist on happiness research. The science behind our most sought-after emotional state has positively exploded in recent years, with fields from social science to neurology probing income, gender, relationships, kids, chocolate, and just about everything else to find out what makes people more or less happy. June Gruber is assistant professor of psychology at Yale University and director of the Yale Positive Emotion and Psychopathology Lab. She says there's a dark side to happiness that's been largely ignored in our pursuit of bliss, and joins us now with more. June, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
I'm just imagining what things are like there at the Yale Positive Emotion and Psychopathology Lab. I mean, does everybody have smiles plastered on their faces?
No, not all the time. We try to take it in moderation.
Well, you know, there's plenty of evidence that people want to be happy. You know, self-help books, aisles and aisles, and magazine covers devoted to the promise of happier kids, happier marriage, workplaces. Put a lot of stock in happiness research. Do people believe that reading about it makes it possible?
I think we're curious in terms of wanting to understand why, what makes it possible. And I think we're looking in many different avenues to find it, in books, in science, in movies. And I think this is the very quest for happiness that's always been a core part of what makes us human.
You point out that there are very different types of happiness, not all of them so good for you. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, so we talk about happiness all the time. And what's unfortunate about that is that it means different things to different people. I think of happiness like a broad umbrella. And under that umbrella, there's many different varieties or flavors of happiness. We have things like these high arousal, you know, states of excitement and joy. You know, we're pursuing opportunities. We have these states that are more about connecting us closer to others, things like compassion, love. And then we have states that are really about the self and enhancing a sense of self, like pride. And so these are all different ways of experiencing this broad umbrella of happiness. And they're all different in the ways that they help us and even hurt us at times.
How about that kind of extreme happier, the mania? How does that figure in? I've always thought of that as opposite of depression, but I get the idea that it's not very healthy in itself.
No. So that's what a lot of what our lab studies is, this phenomena of mania, where we see people in these high arousal states of excitement and joy and feeling like they're on top of the world, extreme elation. But at the same time, they're doing things that are negatively impacting their life. They're, you know, engaging in spending sprees. They're taking, you know, really risky behaviors. They're, you know, rupturing marital bonds and relationships with friends. So how can it be that someone can feel so good, yet do things that can be so bad for them? And this is part of what we're trying to understand. Is this happiness gone awry, or is this really something else altogether?
And what are you coming up with?
Yeah, so that's a great question. What we're trying to think about it is we think of these states like feeling happy or good on a continuum, and that what mania might be in part is just an extreme, extreme point on that continuum. Right? Or it's almost, you know, too much of a good thing.
You write about how happiness can also be socially awkward. So do you mean when, let's say, a painfully affectionate couple interacts with somebody that might have been recently divorced?
Yeah, so there's two ways in which it can be socially awkward. One of them is exactly what you said, where you're feeling positive emotion in the wrong context, right? So someone comes up to you saying they've gone through a painful divorce, or you can imagine, you know, you're at a funeral, these contexts where it's really better not to be happy, right? It might be more appropriate to be compassionate or feel sad for the person in front of you. That's one way. The second way, and this is something that one of my graduate students now is looking at, is how happiness can make you blind sometimes to the needs and concerns of others. You can get too caught up in feeling good for yourself, and that this can lead you to have a hard time empathizing or understanding the emotions of other people.
Everyone knows people who identify as a realist, maybe to avoid being, you know, labeled as negative or pessimistic. Is there something to that? Are people who are less happy less likely to be disappointed?
I think that's a really interesting point, because we know that people who strive for happiness, maybe some people who are buying those same self-help books you talked about earlier, we know that these are the people who may also be setting themselves up for disappointment because they're striving and wanting happiness so much that they're often going to find that not every situation is going to make them happy, or maybe not happy in the way they hoped. So in that sense, you can set yourself up for disappointment when you're focused too much on feeling happy.
The whole science of happiness seems to require a lot of oversimplification of very, very complicated things. I mean, do you find that? How do you work with that?
No, it's a great question, and I think you're not the first person that I think has voiced this concern that are we taking it too simply by just saying happiness is good or happiness is bad even? And I think there's good reason to be concerned. It is complex. There's different varieties, there's different contexts, there's different reasons, and even the nature of what is happiness is a question that people still are debating to this day. So I think you're right that we need to be really careful in how we study happiness, not to gloss over all the really fascinating nuances that it has.
And how about measuring it? I mean, now there are countries and societies that are advocating for, you know, calculating gross national happiness rather than gross revenue. How do you measure that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a good question. Do you measure it by, some people will measure it by asking people simply to rate how happy they feel or how satisfied with life they are at this time point. That's one way that often these things are done, with survey measures. But is that enough? Are we good at estimating our happiness, right? Or do we need to find more behavioral or objective measures? We have people looking in the brain. We have people looking at, you know, the way that our body physiologically responds. I wonder, in part, if that might be a direction that we'll need to go ultimately in measuring happiness, to not just rely on one source of information, not just what you report feeling, not just what your, you know, your body signals say.
You happy, June?
I try. You know, we still are trying to figure out what happiness is.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
June Gruber, assistant professor of psychology at Yale University. She's also director of the Yale Positive Emotion and Psychopathology Laboratory. For a link to an article she wrote for the Greater Good blog, it's called Four Ways Happiness Can Hurt You. And to see her TEDx talk on the topic, go to wordofmouthradio.org.